Party's gonna love this.
Yeah. This is the sound of success.
Yeah. I guess do a lot of unwrapping in advance. At 5:31, thanks for every day assembly meeting to order. We'll start with our roll call.
Boy.
All right, number one.
Here.
Number Suter.
Here.
Number Stitch.
Here.
Number Raymond.
Here.
Here. Number Markley.
Here.
Levinsky. Number Banks. Absent. Vice Chair Cohen.
Here.
And Carrollton.
Here.
Whoa, I had a thought.
Great. And we can move on to public comments. If you have any speaker cards or people in the room who would like to present. Sounds like we have no public comment. Okay. If there's no public comment, we'll move on to item 4, approval of the April 6th, 2026 regular meeting action minutes.
I'll move to approve.
I'll second.
Hold on. Number Wax.
Aye.
Number Suter.
Aye.
Number Stitch.
Aye.
Member Raymond.
Abstained.
Number Markley.
Aye.
Number Lisinski. Absent. Number Banks. He's absent.
Vice Chair Cohen.
Aye.
You're welcome.
Aye.
All right. Then we can move on to our action item, which is the American League of Cyclists application.
I unfortunately not made as much progress as I want to talk about my personal life, but I'm about 30% done with the application. There's a running Google Doc. I've been tagging questions I've not been able to answer with comments for staff to answer. But it seems like I'm able to answer about 80% of stuff so far. Coming through into the education section, it seems a little bit less so. So I don't think a lot of the elementary public education programs are as publicly available online. But it looks like I'll have more time to take care of that this week. Is there a good email or contact with staff to share the application with to get help on?
Yeah, so you can share that with me for the feedback, you know. I just want to clarify in terms of process for this application. So it will be submitted on behalf of the city of Emeryville, correct?
Yes.
So that will need to go through like a council approval process, just because it will be on behalf of the city, not the bicycle and pedestrian committee. So it will need to be coming feedback as an action item to then be forwarded to council. This will then be a staff report, and then pending their approval, then we can actually submit that application.
When is the June council meeting?
I have to pull those things up. So basically, we have a June 1st feedback, right? And then that would need to get turned around really quickly in order to make it out of the council meeting before the meeting with the application deadline, which is
I just want to double check that.
Yeah. No, we just don't really think that's a really feasible timeline.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So staff's recommending that we would maybe you can make a motion or an action for the BPAC to then apply for next year, maybe. I think there'll be some more momentum around other projects on like 40th Street. We'll be kind of going into construction at that point. And I think we'll have more progress on our active transportation plan as well. It'll just be more of a compelling
option. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Is it an annual application?
It's annual. I believe it's, is it annual or every 2 years? It's annual. And every year they update the application, but they color code anything that's changed. So having the application done ahead of time should be super helpful.
Ahead of the game on that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I don't know. Keep
them
coming.
I'll take a
bite. Are there any clarifying questions for this action item?
there a way to indicate a specific meeting or timeline that we can start the process of feedback for next year's application, since we now have more lead time, better sense on timing?
Yeah. In terms of getting an action item on a council agenda?
I mean, yeah, I guess working backwards from council to BPAC to like feedback action items, BPAC information item or something.
Is it likely that council will send it back to us?
That's a good question. I don't know. I can't say whether they would or not. I think the city applied for the American League of Bicyclists application, I think, back in 2016. And it's good for 4 years. So obviously it's not since then. But we were sober at that time. So we want to get something above that, hopefully. Maybe they're a gold and
I think diamond.
Oh, diamond. Okay, yeah.
Like this.
So yeah, but that would be the idea. Also, actually, transportation plan has that as a policy of the program that we want to pursue. So we want to work with Paul Navarre is going to be presenting on that later, so we could talk about that. Well, that can align.
Cool. Yeah. Any other clarifying questions? Any public comments?
Yeah, it's Robert, friend of Privacy Director with Mikey Spage. Two things. One is I've participated in other applications before, and then also the two recent awards in Brentwood and Alameda. Part of the value of it is the report card that comes after that shows like kind of like a status report and also recommendations. If now that we're in a longer lead time, if the BPAC wants a presentation or info sharing about the Alameda and Brentwood applications and some of the report card stuff, like that, bring that. I did that with our own staff already. It was pretty interesting. The second part is that the American Bicyclists actually contacted me to find out if anybody I knew was interested in evaluating this year's applications. So if anybody wants to actually help out with evaluating applications for this year from other cities, that's an open volunteer opportunity that will give you an insight to how the list of applications are written. So just let me know.
When would you need to know that?
They contacted me, I think, last week for a volunteer. So ideally, sometime this month.
Okay.
Are there any member comments? My only member comment was that I presented the BPAC accomplishments for last year and goals for this year at City Council, and Mayor Power rightfully brought up that we should also be applying for a walkable cities designation. Which is this. So I think it would be great if we could also add that to our list of things that we want to accomplish for the next year. I gather that the application process is pretty similar, although a little, probably a little different, and it wouldn't be too hard to move all of the information over that we've already gathered for the bikeable cities.
Okay.
Yep. Just thought I'd say that. Any more member comments on this item?
I would like to compliment you on the presentation. I listened to the recording. It was very, very well done. I felt proud after listening to your presentation.
Great. Right. Before we if there's no more comments on this item, we can move to our information items, of which we have many. It's a very informational meeting. But we can start with our Bike to Wherever Day update. I believe that's Matt and Violet.
All right, that's me. Thank you all for your work. It is very much appreciated. I'll keep it short and sweet because Bike to Wherever Day is coming. So we have presented most of this already. Just a quick update that things are progressing. The passport stamp is finalized. We are having 5 stations, ones we've had in previous years. The high school is the new addition that happened last year. It was quite popular. A lot of kids enjoyed it, and it was a good news. So excited to have that back. This is what the passport's going to look like. And we have a copy here if you want to see if that's what it's going to be. Just pass that along. We also have our prizes this year. A few of the giveaways are along the top. We've received some very great submissions for the stickers. We're putting some color behind those, and we'll be, that's just some example. There's some other great ones in there. So expect to see those day on. Look forward to that. There'll be the pinwheels, which you're putting together, standard fare for the regular giveaways. We added the reflective vests for the prize winners. There's only 10 of those this year, so if you are coming out, get one early. You can, I'm not going to model it for you, but if you'd like to, you can come check it out after the program tonight as to what that's like. And then the lights are a little bit of a different model, but they are very bright. We tested them out and excited for those as well. We are increasing the outreach this year because Bike to Wherever Day is great and we love to talk about bikes. So redoing the large poster that talks about all the different projects that are going on that have happened recently, and things happening on the Greenway and informational items. And then you're going to be hearing about this later tonight, but the project is one that we're going to be highlighting. So that's going to be getting its own poster along with information with it. And there'll be information packets at all the stations, so you won't have to learn and know everything about these. There'll be stuff for folks to read. But this is not what the poster is actually going to look like. I'm just putting this as a stand-in because it's not complete and finished yet. But just so you know, those are kind of going to be the two posters that are out there. So when you're interacting with folks, if you're at a station, that's what it's going to look like. We did get confirmation from AC Transit that they are going to have their bike mount at the 66 and Greenway station. So if you want to conquer your fears, come on down, try putting your bike on a bus bike mount. That's a great fun time, actually. Like, it's tried a couple times to get over it. It's intimidating, though, if you're waiting for all those people on the bus. So that's a quick and very short update. We do also have a Bike to Wherever Day proclamation coming to City Council tomorrow, just declaring May 14th as Bike to Wherever Day in the city of Emeryville. And I should have spoken with you ahead of time, but if there are any GPAC members that would be available and like to receive that, that now I'm opening the floor to you, first to the chair and anyone else, if you'd like to do that. If not, I would then open the floor to Rob Prince or Becky. And that's all I've got.
Okay. Clarifying questions from the members?
You should still need members to help support and have, like, we were talking about possibly storing like materials prior to that event.
Yes, definitely. Actually, yes, on both of us. We have the minimum number, like a feedback number and staff member at all the stations, okay. But an extra hand would very much be appreciated at this point. So, but can we count on your vote? But yes. Seriously, all right.
Yeah.
Great. And we think we have storage mostly figured out at this okay. point, though, but I'll connect with you afterwards.
Okay. That sounds good.
Have we figured out how 40th and San Pablo is going to be different this year?
We have reviewed the premises and identified a location that, I mean, potentially could work as a there's still space. I mean, there's a fence that's along the area. There's space on 40th Street for 2 tents, so just a little bit further north. But I think it's still going to be doable there. Although if you have alternate suggestions or think that's not going to be open to feedback, I'm still going to respond.
So what is the status of the smoothie stock?
That is, we will be doing that in the next couple days, actually, reviewing the smoothie status. So at least one of them is functioning great. The other two we have to confirm, and we have a pair of M4 screws on our device.
M4 or M5? Well, let me check. I'm not, I was M4, but let's get both.
Okay. I'll consult mechanics in the room before we go on any further.
Okay.
But no, they're being reviewed and make sure everything's functioning before the event.
Okay.
Did we manage to recruit a food truck?
No, we have not had any. I'm sorry.
Public comment?
Hey, Robert Friends, Spiky Spig. And again, two things. One is, unfortunately, I can't beat City Council tomorrow for the proclamation, although I appreciate it. Basically, so many different cities are doing it. Same time, I'm already booked in Wolf Creek. But I would like to get photos from all the proclamations if possible. So any DPAC member of the city is out there can do a photo and send it to me afterwards. We'd love to help promote that. Very little thanks for the proclamation. So that's number one. Number two is just another quick reminder. I'm trying to remind everybody as much as possible. At Energizer stations, it is a government-funded activity, which means that there cannot be any ballot measure or candidate campaigning happening anywhere near the Energizer station. I know there's a big campaign happening for the Connect State Area Transit measure. Unfortunately, that cannot happen anywhere near the Energizer stations. It's really helpful. It is individual people who are at the Energizer stations can help enforce that. So I just wanted to make sure that you all are aware. If you see anything like that happening, please ask them to, you know, move nearby, but not at the Energizer
station. If we get people who say, how close can I stand? What do we tell them?
We're giving everybody a rule of thumb at least 10 feet away. Well, that's, it seems like it should be reasonable. You don't want anybody like within photo taking distance, really. Yeah. So if you're taking photos of the Energizer stations, try not to get the Connect Bay Area signs or petition ballots in there. There's a lot of tax talks or ballot measure talks that you know don't sit very minute amount of detail. So we're trying to keep it all above.
Maybe we can say 25 feet, which is like basically from me to you.
Yeah. Whatever seems good for that area.
Any member comments? I am unavailable to present the Bike for Revenue Proclamation and other BPAC duties. But anyone else, like to present at City Council tomorrow?
And just to clarify, this would just be the mayor or the vice mayor would be doing the actual proclamation. So it would just be you receiving on behalf of, you know, it would be back. Yeah, be at the very beginning of the agenda.
I just want to know, what time is it?
He should be starting at 7:15, I believe. But let me make sure on that and I'll get back to you. And then one other thing, I apologize to add to the end of that. We are looking always to add more people to our sponsorship group. And I know, I believe it's Premier Nutrition moved into where the old Cliff Bar headquarters are, and they do kind of one of their lines of similar protein bars. If anyone has a contact there that they know that they can pass along, it'd be appreciated. But if not, it's fine.
Where are
you going? Thank you all for listening. If you want to see any good stuff, come on over.
Any more member comments? No? Move on. Thanks for your presentation. And we can move on to the active transportation plan updates.
Chair, can we push that item? They're having some technical difficulties.
Sure.
And so can we push it and push item 6.4 up?
Sure. We're just going to skip 6.3.
So 6.2 and 6.3 are the same presenter.
I see.
Yeah.
Before it is. Emeryville Loop and Christy Powell build updates.
Right. Magic tricks. So I'll be on the back.
Yeah.
Are there more?
I wanted to show how Luke works. There we go.
Hey,
yeah. Sorry about that.
They're safe. It's good. It's good then. It's good then.
Now you're ready, and I'll stop crunching.
Okay. No, you're fine. All right. Ready to go. Okay. All right. I'm Ryan O'Connell. I'm a senior civil engineer in the Public Works Department, if you don't know me. I'm here to talk about two items today, all related to the same area of the city, in the Emeryville Loop area. I'm going to start off with talking about the overall Emeryville Loop area, and then it will boil down into the Palco-Christie intersection at the tail end of that. So the first area that we'll talk about is just the overall safety of the Emeryville Loop area. We're going to talk about how the project is going to make it easier to get around and just make the city better overall to get around once the project is implemented. So the agenda today, what we're talking about with the loop is why we're studying this area. We're going to get into some of the operational safety factors of what went into our initial feasibility analysis that we went into as part of this traffic study. We're going to show some near-term improvements that we are going to dive into a little bit deeper. We're going to show what the concept is for the Emeryville Loop. We're going to show some initial results from our analysis and some key takeaways. So first of all, what is the Emeryville Loop? This is the Emeryville Loop. It's right in the center of our city, like the economic core of our city. It goes around a lot of our hotels of the city. It is, you know, we have the Powell Street Plaza here on the south end. We have the Bay Street Mall right here, Public Market to the north, Denny's and the gas station right there. The major street of Powell Street right here. This carries a lot of our traffic. Palco-Christie is the second busiest intersection of our city, 40th San Pablo the first. We carry a lot of regional traffic through this whole area. We are a regional shopping destination with all of our box stores, our mall right here. We carry a lot of traffic off of I-80 that carries right through this loop area. The Emeryville Loop concept has been thrown out, you know, as an idea for, you know, over a couple of decades. It hasn't been incorporated in any plan until recent memory. It is now in our ATP plan. It is now as an identified project in our CIP. The idea behind it is we have two-way traffic in the whole loop area through these 5 to 6 intersections. So coming off of I-80, you go through the Palco-Christie intersection. You go down by Trader Joe's at the Powell Street Plaza. It's two-way traffic. We do have a little segment of one-way traffic between Trader Joe's and the Christie-Shulman intersection. Going north on Shell Mound, it's back to two-way traffic. Shell Mound Way, two-way traffic. Christie, back to Palco-Christie, two-way traffic. What we would be doing with the Palco, this is identified in the ATP plan, is a one-way loop. So converting all these two-way segments that are here to be one-way with all general purpose lanes in each of these segments. The ATP plan also has calls out for a transit-only lane to be on the outer ring of the loop. And then in the internal part of the loop is a two-way cycle track. Right now we have an existing cycle track from Christie Shell Mound all the way to the Palco-Christie intersection. This would increase or, you know, extend that loop or the cycle track all the way around the ring. So it would add a crossing right here at Palco-Christie on this side of the intersection. It would make some new bike connections around this end of the loop and on this west side of Shell Mound Street. And it would add some new connections right here at, of course, Public Market. So, hit all my points. So this area, while it's like a small footprint, it just carries a ton of activity. You know, so we have a lot of people walking from hotels to the Public Market, going to restaurants. We have a lot of visitors here at the hotels, just shopping, just regional traffic coming in here from out of town, but also just people that live here doing their trips to Trader Joe's.
the economic core of our city, really, right here. So it's a very important part of our city. And let's see. So the big thing about going one way with the loop is it opens up the geometry of the cross-section in throughout the loop. So we have a limited cross-section width when we have two lanes of traffic. When we go to one lane, it allows for more width of the cross-section, and we're able to fit more goodies like protected intersections, two-way cycle tracks, and other things that we have not been able to fit historically. So the move to one way is a big deal in terms of space. And what I'll show later, it's also a big deal in terms of time for this the signals. So it really unlocks our corridor where width and geometry has been a real constraint. So let's see. Let's keep going. So our Invergill plans, what do they say about this area? The LRSP, the Local Roadway Safety Plan, this was adopted last summer. It identified some of our historical crash areas in the city. Three out of the five highest risk areas in the city with the most crashes were in the Invergill Loop. So that was the I-80 Powell intersection, Powell-Christie intersection, and then also the Shelman-Christie intersection. So what it says to do as a countermeasure is reduce conflicts. So what we do to remove conflicts is completely remove a multiple turning movements out of the intersection and only do one way. And that's a big reduction in conflicts. ATP talks about adding safer crossings in the Emeryville Loop area as some of the improvements in each of these intersections. The capital improvement program has this identified as a project, but it's unfunded. So why this location matters, like I said, it's identified as a high priority location for collision reduction. The regional gateway, connecting regional traffic to the core of Emeryville, and it sits at the hub of our protected bike network and at the economic core of our city. So really, if you look at this, it's like the hub of our bike network and we have spokes coming off of a protected bike network. So you look at it like this, yeah, that's our hub right there in the center. You go to the south, we have the 40th Street Multimodal Project. Point up here. So the 40th Street Multimodal Project will be going to the Shelmount-Christie intersection and going all the way through here. Protected bike facility all the way through there. The Powell Street Redesign Project will connect to the Bay Trail segment right here and would connect all the way up to the marina, all protected facilities. To the north, we would be connecting to the public market Shell Mound protected class 4 facilities that are up here. There's little segments that we want to improve on in between. And then, so that's connecting to our protected bike network. And let's see. So long term and short term, yeah, it's just fits for the city to do a project here. And what the data tells us from the LRSP confirms what we see in the field as far as the stress levels are high when you're out there. There's dual right conflicts in multiple areas. So the southbound direction, we have dual right turns. We, in the eastbound direction, there's dual right turns going over those pedestrian crossings as well. The pedestrian crossings are long. There's a lot of pedestrian exposure time. In the LRSP, like I said, three out of the five top locations were in this location. Number one was 40th San Pablo, just a data point for you. And yeah, so. So later, I'll go into this a little bit more, but we do have a near-term improvement that we'll be getting into the Powell-Christie intersection where we want to do an LPI plus, which is a LPI with a blank out sign. And we'll also be adding some better passive pedestrian detection at this intersection. And this will help reduce turning conflicts at the intersection.
What is an LPI?
Leading pedestrian interval. So I'll get into that a little further later. So the loop builds on improvements at a bigger system level. And when we shift to one way, things just get a lot simpler and easier to follow across the network. And it makes things possible to things that we couldn't do before, like exclusive PET phases and at multiple intersections, especially where we have heavy turning movements today. And it also creates more consistent and safer bike crossings throughout the entire loop and the entire conflict-free way to get through multiple intersections. So you can go in the inner ring and just get all the way through without even touching a signal. So you can just, you can run laps if you want to in the inner signal. So, and yeah, really the one-way setup, beyond just the space constraints that it frees up, it's also just time. So I'll get into a little bit of that. So we're able to see some real benefits in that. And that's what really unlocks our exclusive PED phases that we're able to provide once we do that. So our preliminary findings, we want to see like how this performs operationally. We tried out clockwise, counterclockwise. Counterclockwise was the way to go in our initial assessments. And then we looked at weekday peak periods and weekend peak periods to see how they work with existing volumes. And then we added in the volumes of pre-approved projects in the near-term development pipeline. So this includes 5801 Christie. So this is the site right behind Denny's. Includes the area of the BMR up here by Horton. So all these sites being built out and all that traffic being added into the area and pumping that volume into the loop and testing how this works in the loop. So really put it to the test. So the loop with transit lanes, as the ATP specifies, showed excessive queues. So this is what we're showing right here with the red. The red lines represent queues forming throughout the corridor. And as you can see, in many of these areas, they back up to back beyond multiple intersections. So right here at people can see. So beyond one intersection, they even go beyond 59th, all the way up to 62nd. Up here, they're going beyond 59th. On Hollis, they're going beyond multiple intersections. Shell Mound's going beyond multiple intersections. We call this just gridlock situation. So in this, you get a ripple effect of in our models, it's causing kind of just a gridlock chaos situation in a way. Where it breaks the model. And so once we saw this, we tested it, we tried to optimize it, tried to see like where the bottlenecks were, and we weren't able to get the transit lanes to work. So what we ended up doing was removing the transit lanes, but what we ended up doing was doing TSP in the model, and then also doing in-lane boarding on the outer lanes. So this would be optimizing like the transit islands on the outer lane. So you have smaller boarding times at those areas within the loop. And then also optimizing the timing to add in exclusive PED phasing at all the intersections in the loop. And then also maintaining the two-way cycle track throughout the loop. And the idea is when the exclusive PED phasing is going, the cycle track can also cross at the same time. And here are the results. So in the PM peak hour, we were comparing the existing network today, how it's performing with the two-way traffic to the one-way loop configuration without transit lanes. And overall, what we see is a net improvement in delay across the system. Some movements experience like small increases, but those were offset by larger reductions at the more critical locations, which were Powell I-80, Powell Christie, and the Powell Street Plaza. So some of our critical intersections in the loop that historically have the most congestion were getting cleared up. And the other intersections like Shell Mound Way and Christie, and Shell Mound Way and Shell Mound by the public market were getting a little bit more like offset of the congestion. And that was, but overall, we were getting a net positive, less delay throughout the loop. So when we see something like this, we would also expect
in the future that the system would start to balance itself. So as some delays on the north side of the loop would occur, some people would start using Ashby and Shell Mound as their exits, and we would actually redistribute some traffic to the north side of the city and actually have less volume in the loop that would go around. So some people would be redistributed to the north side of the city. And at the so really with the PM weekday results that are just shown here, we see modest improvements, but consistent improvements. And then I'll get into it a little bit later with the queues. We see just reliable queues in our modeling. So today we see kind of just random spikes that really just kind of congest the network in the existing conditions. And this was a little bit more reliable, kind of, but easier to coordinate conditions. So there's better flow, smoother operations that we saw. In the weekend peak hour, the improvements were much more significant. This is the biggest gains that we saw. So we saw a substantial net improvement, which was over 3 minutes of delay reduction across the system in the peak hour, which is crazy. We don't see this in any timing project if you have big gains like this. So this would really help on the weekends when we see high retail and visitor activity in this area. We get a lot of backup on I-80 and Powell that actually backs up onto 580 at times, during, especially on November, December, the big shopping times. And so we see major reductions, delay, travel time, stop-and-go conditions. And the loop concept performs especially well under this condition. So that was an unexpected big result, actually, in our results. So I'll show some queue comparisons. The blue lines are the existing two-way condition of today. So these are, I'll get into the next slide of what it shows, but blue line is two-way condition, green line is one-way loop. So today we see in the PM weekday that we see in our typical PM peak hour, we have a big queue on the Powell Street left turn. After we do the one-way loop, our queue would reduce by 500 feet. We see shorter queues on the off-ramp. We see shorter queues in the Powell Street Plaza area. We see similar queues at some other intersections. And then we see an offset to this intersection over here to the north, where we do have capacity to hold that queue. That being said, this volume would still be able to get through in one cycle, because we have all the lanes here. So we still would be able to flush that queue out. In the weekend, we see substantial improvements nearly everywhere. So we see shorter queues approaching the ramps, off the ramp, into Powell Christie in both directions, and similar queues down here at Shell Mound Christie, but shorter queues at the Powell Street Plaza, shorter queues over here, and slight increase up here. Okay. So this is some of the configurations of what we're doing without the transit-only lanes. The ATP, our active transportation plan, does show some graphics of what the loop can look like with transit-only lanes. We've now reconfigured this to match our new optimized model without the transit-only lanes, and this is what it can look like. So this is the Powell Christie intersection. We actually have it twisted. So north is facing this way. The gas station right here on the southwest corner, Powell Street Plaza, is over here.
And the freeway is down here.
Yeah, freeway is down here. Yeah. So we would have triple rights from Powell coming into Christie Avenue. We would have triple rights from Christie Avenue onto Powell. These would be general purpose lanes. Let's see, we'd have the cycle track. Let me get the sign. So cycle track on the inner part of the loop and a new crosswalk that would be created here. So on top of just the cycle track, we also now have a new sidewalk that's here on the inner part of the loop. And new crosswalks that connect to this side of the loop as well. And anything else to point out? That's about it. Yeah. And then much of this is very close to what you see today. So except today we have one northbound lane, maybe two. And now it gets converted into all southbound lanes. So, and then our cycle track remains mainly the same. This is the Shell Mount Christie intersection, and then overlapped on top of this is our plans from the 40th Street multimodal project. So you can see how it overlaps with that. So we actually have the cycle track from that project is on the west side of Shell Mount Street, and it lines up to match up right with the inner loop. So we would cross right directly into this protected corner, and you would go right into the loop area. There would also be crossings from the Bay Street Mall area to get into the loop onto each side. And then going north on to Shell Mound towards Public Market, and this is Powell Street Bridge, we'd be adding a new mid-block crossing here, likely with RRFBs, and adding a new connection going through the hotel parking lot. There is a full-time public easement that goes across this parking lot. We anticipate to improve this connection across the Sheraton Hotel. And so you don't always have to go all the way around the loop to get over here to Powell Street. You could just cut right across as well. So just intersect. Okay.
You wouldn't be getting to Powell Street on that anyway. You'd be below Powell Street.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You'd be going to the stairs to go
up. To the stairs. Yeah. Yeah. So for pedestrians or with your bike, and maybe there's some improvements there that we can do for the bikes getting up there. Connecting just back from where we just were on the last slide, there's three left turns now that come into Shell Mound Way and three left turns that go to Christie Avenue. There's some improvements. I think we haven't gotten to really dive into this intersection yet, but I really want to dive into this, improve this. But there, I think we can do a little bit better here of how we get the bikes across this intersection into the loop, because we do have a dual right turn that's going to be created from the public market into the loop. So we'll discuss that at a certain point once this fleshes out a little bit more. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So key takeaways on this project. This project's really about addressing one of our highest priority safety locations in the city. And it gives us a way to actually move forward on the improvements we've already identified in our ATP and LRSP. And the big shift here is it's about simplifying everything that moves through this area. If we reduce conflicts and make it easier and safer for everyone to navigate, and from an operation standpoint, we're seeing better flow and less overall delay across the network. So just as important, congestion is contained, so we're not seeing those impacts spill into the surrounding street. And overall, this sets up the area to handle future growth in a way that works better than what we have today. And this really sets us up for developments that are expected on the east side of the city across the railroad tracks, which are expected to go over I-80 through this area using Powell Christie, using Powell I-80. So we really need a project like this to come through to support that. But that being said, this project isn't about traffic fully. It's also about making this part of the city safer, more connected, and easier to move through for everyone, you know, bikes, peds, and general traffic. So, and that is all I got. So what we need from BPAC today is informational items and just feedback and questions and answers. And I have a second part of this presentation for the Powell Christie quick build. I can go into that, but I think it's a good part to pause. Yeah. I need a breath.
What is the CIP schedule for this project?
So it's unfunded. There's no schedule at this time. Okay. Yeah. So we'd be waiting for grant funding, developer funds, or council priority to throw some funds at it. So one of the three combos or combination of all three.
And when will we get feedback as to when some of those start fleshing out?
We typically, we just presented on this project at our Transportation Sustainability Committee. They're usually the first, driver of a project like this. They'll kick it with a recommendation to council. And once they recommend a project for, funding or prioritization, that's usually like the first step of one of these projects. So
within six months would be a reasonable.
I would say something like that, that they either, prioritize it for next grant application or for some other use, something like that. So that's been a typical projection of other projects like this. Yeah.
There's usually an annual, every 3 years they have, granted 5 years is what the CIP is, but they usually start discussing this early on. So I wanted to know if we're going to make it to the next one or it might skip and it might be 10 years out.
Yeah, I wouldn't see it being in the 10-year out. Okay. Especially the next 2-year cycle of the CIP, we kind of re-rank our CIP projects, look at the available budget and prioritize based on that, bring that to council.
Okay.
I think it will be discussed at length at that time.
Okay.
And Jeff? Do you remember CIP coming back to council for mid-cycle CIP?
It is not.
No, but is it next summer?
It's 2 cycles. Sorry, 2-year cycles, so yeah.
Yeah, okay. So next summer, 2027. Yeah.
What is the traffic you model off of relative to what we're seeing today?
Percentage-wise? I almost need to get back to you on that. Okay. But yeah, it was probably 20-30% if I off the cuff guess right there. I don't have the numbers offhand right now.
Yeah. Did you all run a higher end model? Like what if someone built a 785,000 square foot hospital nearby?
We went very conservative. Yes, we did. Yes.
Okay. All right. And it still works at these significantly potentially higher traffic.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you get anything for transit specifically, how that might is projected to be affected by this model?
We were testing it with VISM, which is a certain modeling software that does transit very well. That's first thing that we did right off the bat was test transit only lanes in the loop to see if they can work. So then that's what we found out was they cannot work in the loop. That being said, and actually that's a point I should have made during the presentation. Oh, sorry, that's too far. But we do see benefits of the loop without transit-only lanes. The transit gets transit-only lanes. So the buses get transit-only lanes all the way up to the loop. So they get some optimizations getting there, and then they get optimization getting through the loop because they get a little bit better flow through there on that. So they don't need the transit-only lanes through the loop per se. They just get better flow all the way through. We get better coordination all the way through. And then they can hop out after getting through the loop and get into the transit-only lane that's coming from the MTC project. If you guys know, there's a transit-only lane project that's coming on Powell Street to connect them to I-80 and the toll lanes here pretty soon. So there'll be transit-only lanes on both sides, optimized loop in the middle. They should be running pretty good.
Okay. But you're expecting, as far as within the loop, something like optimization that's roughly close to what everybody else is getting?
So we see transit signal priority. So they would get optimized green times. So they wouldn't get long red times as they come through. And then the outer lane would have a transit island or just in-lane boarding. So reduce dwelling times as they're there. So that'd be the way to handle it.
Or clarifying questions?
How many lanes are turning left and turning right? How big is the crossing distance for the pedestrians? Because it doesn't seem like it's really reducing pedestrian crossing distance.
There will be some reductions at some crossings, let's go back. Uh, for example, right here at Powell Christie, this will actually get bulbed out a little bit more. So this crossing will go a little bit less than what is today. This gets bulbed out a little bit more as well. So this crossing will go less. This is one that we're playing with. This is 10% geometry too. So this isn't the final. But this is one that we can play with on this corner at the gas station. We can realign how these lanes are on this side. So this corner could move out if we need to. And so this could be a reduced one. I think today is about 100 feet. Phil, is that what we saw today? Like, yeah, 97 feet. Yeah. So, this one might get reduced in that fashion. But generally there's protected corners here, but so there's actually not even a crossing here today. Mm-hmm. This one probably will stay the same is what it's looking like, but this is early geometry. We're not necessarily optimizing that yet, but that's something that we'll be looking into doing. So the goal is to have protected corners nearly everywhere where we can. So I think we'll be trying to do that.
And then no right on red, I'm assuming?
Or yeah, 100% left on red. Yeah, 100%. So yeah, there's no right turns going with pedestrians in this configuration. So with triple rights, you definitely cannot do that. And your first question was like, how many turn lanes are going, you know, in each direction? Generally, it's three turn lanes in each direction. So three rights in all configurations, three lefts within the loop. And then coming into the loop generally, so there's two lefts coming into the loop from Powell, the public market area, we have two rights coming into the loop. So generally like that.
Well, can you walk me through the decision-making process on having the bidirectional bike lanes on the center for each area of the loop?
Yeah, it's gone through a few iterations, but one of the biggest thoughts was having zero conflicts through five intersections. So being able to get all the way through each of the intersections, go where you need to get to and just hop out. So being in that center hub, get to where you need to and then hop out. So that was one of the biggest things. The other idea was just connecting to our existing infrastructure that was there. So 1/3 of it was already built out. And we're already going to be connecting to it with our 40th Street project on the west side here. So it's had a good nexus point to just keep that same alignment from these two projects that both hit at that same point.
What does the connection to the marina look like? Kind of during the last intersection, like getting out of the loop to go to the marina?
Similar right now. Yeah. So our focus is only the loop, not on Powell to I-80, but with the right council priority or direction, we could expand it.
So it would be like a bike only signal to come this direction to get on the path that's in the bridge.
Yeah. So right now.
Or like ped only.
Yeah. So sorry. Say again.
Like the signal to cross is going to be ped and bike only, no cars.
Yeah. It would be exclusive. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a good point because right now on the south side, that's where the shared path is. So that would seem most logical where the bike path would come. Wouldn't be on the north side. On your no turn on red, are you going to have a whole overhead, traffic light indication showing each lane not being no turning on red?
Probably do something like this with a blank out sign.
Well, then how are you going to keep every lane from not turning right on red?
Yeah, it might be multiple. It could be. Yeah.
Because right now we have a sign all the way back and there's four cars already ahead of it. And it says don't turn on red. And they all do. Yeah. And so it's useless. So you got to put it right in front.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to put a trip where they will lose their tires, you know, at least put it out in front so they see, just like a left-hand turn signal. Yeah. They seem to not okay. Cool.
Yeah, in a situation like this, we'd be using red arrows, so you cannot cross on that. And then probably combination supplemental signs like the blank out. So just no rights, no rights. They're like on top of each other, you know, like multiple things. Yeah.
Okay. We have increased enforcement for that at the beginning of the rollout.
I think we'll definitely be needing that. Yeah. It'd be a unique situation out here. So, especially when it first gets implemented.
Yeah. How are the cars within the loop going to be accessing parking lots?
Same way that they do today. So the driveways will remain in the same places. Yeah. So there may be a few lane shifts to get to left side by like Black Bear Diner or something like that. So lane positioning will be key.
You're going to cross the cycle track?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Right now, yeah. Right
which
there.
Which they do today. Yeah.
Right in there, they have a, I mean, you have a barrier of just cones, but still it stops people from making an illegal left to get to be going north. And so right now, from what I see here, it doesn't look like there's any serious prohibition except for that little island there. Mm-hmm. And so that might stop them, but many people will go out right where your arrow is and then hang a left. Into the across all those lanes into the one. Oh, wait a minute, it's all one way.
One lane
only. Oh, perfect. Okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah, hopefully they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
First problem.
I'll slap myself.
What is the intended like level of the cycle track? Is it sidewalk level? Is it level with the street as it is today?
Probably similar of what it is today, which is slightly elevated. So,
like around the other side too?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, I'd advocate for having it raised above street level for when cars are,
yeah,
vehicles are crossing it, driveways.
Yeah, so like this is a raised crossing right there. Right.
When is the Powell Street like connection to the East Bay project? When is that?
So this Powell Street like left turn? Like,
yeah, I guess down to that would be like going under I-80 or going under the freeway.
Okay, going to the freeway. That is supposed to happen later this year, but I think we have some news that might be dropping maybe next month at BPAC. We have some discussions with MTC on that topic. There's a slight delay to that project, but we don't have all the details yet. So I've only heard privy of some of the information, not all the information. So, but we'll let you guys know.
But ideally that project would be done before the loop.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. It's a funded project. Yeah.
Any other clarifying questions? Public comment?
Hey, Robert Friends, Bucky Spagan. Thanks for the project. I have a bunch of comments I'm going to make really quickly, so I don't want to take up too much time. But if you could step back to like the first concept slide, of the actual street design.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, yeah. So this one, super glad to hear that the plan is to completely separate out the turn movements from the crossing movements, like, you know, and not only just via a LPI and blank out signs, full separation, right?
Yes.
Okay, need to double confirm that. Yeah. And at all of those turn movements, it's super critical.
Yeah.
One of the other issues with this is, you know, there's not very much queuing space at the southwest corner. And so you have like a little bit of a bulb out there, which will help.
Mm-hmm.
But if you angle the crosswalk a little bit, for the Bay Trail crossing, then you could have, you know, take more advantage of that and also have there be a little bit more of a separation, you know, for when vehicles start turning. If there's somebody still dallying through the crosswalk, that would give more, physical, separation as well. So yeah, and then, you know, making sure those curve ramps are very distinct as well. So, you know, you can actually angle in towards the one that you're supposed to get to. Super helpful. And also kudos for adding the missing crosswalk leg in that intersection. That's one of my questions I was going to ask, and I'm super glad to see it's there. I really appreciate that detail. One of the things that's not here is designing for bike turn movements from the cycle track to non-bike ways. So if you're continuing north on Christie, the existing cycle track doesn't support that movement, even though it's legal to do. I would like to see that mistake not be repeated here. So if you're going north in the cycle track, you get to the cycle track turn, but a bike rider might actually live in the apartment to the north or something. So you have to design for that, even if it's not a bike way. Next image. No one in the room is responsible for this. This is a previous generation of Riddell traffic engineers, but one of the mistakes with this cycle track project was not providing a bike connection from the cycle track to and from the driveway at the Trader Joe's. This project is a really good opportunity to fix that. Right now, if you want to cross, you have to use the pedestrian crosswalk, but it doesn't really serve you the direction you want to go if you're going into Trader Joe's. So if you could add in a bike crossing here in both directions, that would be super great. That's something I've wanted for many years. But that would probably have to be figured into your traffic modeling, so I want to make sure to bring it up now. So that's it with this one. No comments here. You know, I think it feeds into the, the existing project nicely, so thanks for that. No comments here either. I know there's some future uses, once that parcel gets developed, so thinking about how to connect bikes to that eventually. This one, another project that no one here is responsible for, but the Shell Mound bikeway past Public Market. One of the problems as you're heading south is there's a bus boarding island and then a turn lane right after the boarding island. So it's like creating a visibility issue right where drivers are going to be crossing over the bike lane. This looks like it makes that worse. I really recommend keeping the bike lane to the right side all the way to the corner and then having another separate crossing movement between the turn lanes and the bike traffic. So that there's no merge zone there, especially after that blind spot at the bus boarding island. It's another issue that should have been fixed a long time ago, and there's an opportunity to do that with this project. That's about it.
Thanks. Can you go back one slide? So I think in the presentation you said this a mid-block crossing would have a rapid flashing lights or something along those lines. My main concern with that is with many lanes of single direction traffic, one car might stop and give you an indication that you are free to cross, and then other lanes do not stop, and you don't have that visibility when you're crossing. So I do appreciate that there's a crosswalk here, and I hate a lot of things about hot beacons. I'm trying to think of what an alternative would be here, but I'm a little worried that it's kind of a pedestrian blunder, because you'll have three lanes of traffic and you have to trust all of them to stop on the blinking lights. I also think the three or four single direction lanes all over the place are going to lead to very fast traffic in this loop. But you can kind of see that right now in Oakland's Chinatown, which has a kind of similar setup where the walkability really suffers because you're against walking around cars that are moving really fast. Wherever we can widen sidewalks and make more comfortable crossings, including pedestrian refuge islands or anywhere where I'm pretty capable, I can cross the street relatively quickly, but if I was elderly or couldn't walk a long distance at once, 100-foot crossing like we see at Christie Powell, I might not make it all the way. some opportunity to let people rest as they cross the street, and restricting turns so they have to be taken tighter. Because the inside turn lanes here are going around the stalled out, which will naturally slow them. But the third lane from the third lane up, that's a really wide turn, which is going to be able to be taken relatively quickly. So if lights are changing and someone's trying to make the light and goes through a red, they're going to be flying around that corner. I'm just a little worried about some of these movements, but I'm a little sad that we're losing transit lanes, but if the modeling doesn't work, that's how it is. I think that's all I had.
Thank you.
Right, member comments?
I have another one. He kind of brought it up. And that is, the senior citizens that are not in motorized wheelchairs, but are in walkers and walking slowly or on a cane, can you put in a visual extender to the light, to the signals? So if you see either a bike or a pedestrian in a crosswalk, so that there's extended time. So it's not a case of the clock runs out and, oh, they're still out there. Can you put something like that in?
Oh. And that's something that we'll be playing with, not playing with, piloting. at the 59th and Hollis intersection here pretty soon, and hoping to implement it out crispy soon. So,
yes. Excellent. One possible solution for the crosswalk that Sam was mentioning is instead of having the flashing lights, flashing yellow lights, you could do the flashing to solid red full stops, like they some of the, you know, I guess they have them all over the place. But that might get a better response from drivers who don't care about flashing yellow lights. I'm also wondering how much can be done to move people through efficiently, but not necessarily quickly. I don't know if that's a thing, if that even exists. But, yeah, I mean, it's like you want to not have people driving too fast, like people are saying. And then if there's any possible way to further reduce conflicts between the cycle track and the driveways, or even reduce some of the driveways for those inner lots, that would be probably very, very helpful to prevent people from getting halfway in or halfway out and then seeing four lanes of traffic all moving and not knowing that they can go. That's just a top off top. And I definitely agree about the loading, or I guess loitering waiting zone on the southwest corner. That's going to get very busy. I know people like to wait in bike lanes. I just don't like when people like to wait in bike lanes. No one likes being yelled at. So if we can kind of delineate that, I'm sure everyone will be much happier.
So first, I want to echo what Robert said about the crossing to Trader Joe's is a great opportunity. When I first moved to this area, I would go to that Trader Joe's and like, ride was pretty nice, except for that part was pretty harrowing and confusing and no good. A lot of people have that experience. Kind of echoing what Sam and Jesse said, I lived in Concord for a few years, and a lot of the center of Concord is like this kind of like patched together series of one-way streets that's really, really hard, like adjacent to freeways. It's awful. There's not a cycle track there, which would have been when I lived there much appreciated, but never would have happened, probably. There were some plans for some of the streets. This seems like a really good thing. I think that what gets me is that, let me back up to my very first comment. Thank you for the project. This is very exciting. my fear is that, like with a series of one-way streets where it's just like tunneling traffic through, I forget what the plan is for this, the speed limits in this area currently with the assembly bill that passed. I forget the number. And like what the longer term plan would be for this project to, for setting speed limits, despite how arbitrary it is, because the design will ultimately indicate how fast people will go. I don't know how to get over that because I think it's pretty clear that one way street is a good option here, but like these like three or four lane highway through the middle really scares me. Suggestion other than
narrow the lanes,
put some greenery on the sides, like make it visibly narrower. I mean, I think that's like, you know, would have a lot of, you know, high cost to the budget here, but like some way to visually narrow it or something like that.
Does your modeling provide like average moving speed?
Yeah, and like driver behavior changes as we narrow the lanes as well. So, we do, even with this converting two-way to one-way, these are very narrow lanes. So we have 10, 10, 11, I think, is some of the configurations. And then to answer, just a quick caveat is the speed limits that we just approved at council is only from Shellmount Way, so just north of the loop and up, and just got approved to be 20, right? So I think it's what we did.
That's great.
Yeah, so 20 miles per hour. South of this, I think it's still 25 or 30, one of the two.
Right.
But yeah, it would definitely be changing with this design.
Okay.
And probably we could do with coordination, control the flow at a certain speed, I would say. So.
Like, you know, this particular part is like the longest part, right?
Yeah.
It could be like a mid-block speed table or something. I mean, something to that effect.
Can't do that on an arterial like this, unfortunately. Yeah. But emergency services would have big heartache and like a lot of other battles that we'd have on that.
A slight bend or something. I mean, I know it kind of has that, but anything to kind of slow people down and make them think.
I'm just very curious if you think of the project specifically with traffic flow, because like you mentioned, the businesses that are in this loop, they tend to bring people who don't necessarily live in Emeryville. That's where all the hotels are and the shops. And I have friends who live out of the area who have, you know, gone to this part of Emeryville, and they've just complained about the loop section and like how confusing it is to figure out how to get the heck out of town. And so since I don't drive in that area, I'm like, this is a great project. Love it. Amazing. But I'm very curious to see how people are going to feel about, like, as David mentioned, it's basically a gigantic roundabout. So I don't really have like any suggestions or anything. I'm curious to see how this is going to play out.
Yeah, I think doing anything, I guess my comment would be like doing anything is a good thing because it's very confusing right now, even as like a local that drives that quite a bit. So I think simplifying it, which is what you're doing, is going to be helpful. But yeah, just echoing what everyone else is saying, it seems like helping bikes, peds, it's kind of staying pretty similar to what it is now. So whatever we can do to like provide bulb outs, reduce crossing distances, add no right turn on red, no right turn or no left turn on red, like anything, I think would be helpful. But yeah, obviously for bikes, this is going to be very useful. For cars, it seems like it's helping, and just confusion for visitors and all that. So it seems like it's going to be helpful as well.
I want to thank you for this project because it's something we've been waiting for decades for, but is happening. You're making it happen. The one problem I see is now the people that go to the shopping center there with Trader Joe's, etc. The only way they can get back onto Powell going back to Watergate is the loop. And that means there's going to be a backup in the shopping center trying to get out because probably there'll be a backup. People stopped waiting to for the next light. So I see it requiring a different timing on signals so that that is managed. I see that as a problem to be considered, because all traffic leaving that shopping center can only go right and then either go left or right but there's a very short distance, and the backup is going to be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. You're supposed to only go right now.
Well, you can go left. You can go left up here, the left-hand two-lane. Well, one lane. That's going to be a bear if only one lane can turn left because, okay, anyway.
There's some optimizations that we found in modeling. That Alistair Plaza will be happy to hear once we try to implement. So yeah, I think we have some ideas there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the presentation, and obviously this is a really exciting project and a crucial part of the city. This is kind of a bridge in some ways, but the exact layout right now, because obviously this part of town has got, you know, probably a couple of decades of major redevelopments ahead that are going to change the shape of, well, change the available geometry that we have to work with. But in the meantime, it is a huge relief to me to see that pathing by the hotel going through and the crosswalk there. That is a very important strategic piece moving forward, and is great to have it secured, even if it is just that much right now. This, as I've presented to this committee, this entire pathway, where you are taking the most direct route as a pedestrian to the waterfront is a huge mess. And, that's going to be a big part of making it less messy. And I think it's going to leak into a lot of, it's going to make a lot of things, available as options later that are going to be really good. And it's also, as someone who, lives on the most dangerous intersection in Emeryville, I've had the experience of seeing a mid-block crossing come in where there wasn't one, and how that changes driver behavior over the years. Driver behavior on San Pablo is still a little extra, but it is nothing like when those crossings first went in. Drivers have been conditioned to expect there are crosswalks through here. It's just dramatically better no matter how bad it is today. And so getting that crosswalk in now, even with all the pieces like that parcel being developed, not being in place, is going to help condition drivers to know that they have to be more careful going through there if they're regular drivers, which a high percentage of people are regular drivers who go through. Great to see. I don't think I have. Oh, yeah. So one observation I do want to make here, though, is that, you know, we have these projections. Everybody's already seeing that this is a situation that is going to enable a high and higher density of traffic to move through here efficiently, right? dramatic gains like we're seeing for weekend traffic, compounded with a significantly increased interest in this area, creates a little situation we like to call induced demand. So we're going to see more traffic coming through here. And as we are figuring out how to deal with how we're going to make these streets more safe and more available for active transportation, that is something that we got to sit with, is that there is just not an end in sight for quite a number of years to an intense level of traffic here. The best we can do is try to mitigate the hazards and make it as comfortable and safe for all the active transportation that we can, because that's the picture that we're dealing with from my perspective. That's all my comments.
Just wanted to piggyback on that. Maybe one thing we can do on that long section of Shell Mountain where we're talking about reducing speeds is add another mid-block crossing in anticipation of the big building that's going to go in and what it's going to be. But again, condition people from the start that they shouldn't be going super fast and prepare for the future with whatever's going to go there and the people that want to cross from one side to the other.
Let's see, can I add one more comment? I forgot. Yeah. Really quick one. Please think about the pedestrian experience on the east side of Shell Lounge, especially north of Christie, because you're getting rid of the bike lane. That means the car traffic is going to be closer to already minimal sidewalk. It's probably going to make the pedestrian experience worse. That same comment I brought up with the Shell Lounge project further south, I don't think there's been any mitigations there. So we'll be able to see, you know, what that feels like in real time, but it'd be nice to think ahead with this project.
Yeah, are we all ready to move to talk about the quick build?
All right.
Day two. Day zero.
Oh, All right, so now we get set up quick bill.
Okay,
so talk big picture. We're going to hone in on what we can do now at Paul Christie. So we talked to LRSP a little bit earlier. This is one of our top five intersections in the city. We want to do a targeted safety intervention at Paul Christie. It's been a long time coming, been a high priority for the BPAC for quite a while. We have an opportunity that we saw to do a low cost, high impact signal mod at this intersection. To improve pet safety, reduce turning conflicts, and it's something that we can do in the near term, in the next couple months, and get some quick actionable results. So it's something that we can have in place while we plan for larger improvements like the loop, and when we, you know, think about what the loop can look like and wait for grants, development, something to kickstart what the loop does. So the current challenges at Paul Christie, I'm sure you're very familiar, sitting at the southwest corner, like we were highlighting earlier. The dual right turn movements while you are crossing. There's complex vehicle movements at all directions. So we have dual rights in the eastbound direction and the southbound direction. We have cycle track coming in from the inner part of the loop, crossing to the Bay Trail. We have these long pedestrian crossings, a lot of exposure time for a pedestrian going through here. It's a high stress environment is what I pin it as. Walking or biking, high stress. So the LRSP, the Local Roadway Safety Plan, had a lot of data for us to digest. And this is overall city data summarized right here. This is our city right there summarized. And what it really told us was pet bike crashes are a smaller share of the total collisions in our city, but they account for a much higher share of serious collisions. So they accounted for 12% of the total collisions, but they accounted for 30% of the injuries, and they accounted for 50% of all severe crashes in our city. That's a big deal. We need to really prioritize the locations where these are happening. So that's why this location was a top priority for us, identified in our LRSP, and why we really want to do some near-term actionable results here at Paul Christie. So what we're talking about doing here is a layered approach. So we want to do some signal timing improvements, leading pedestrian interval. There's a term called LPI plus, and I'll get into what that is. We're going to be doing a 7-second LPI here. We tried to do a little bit more. It kind of put us into that, you know, I showed earlier this, that maximum queuing scenario. It got into that once we got beyond 7 seconds. So we're able to get 7 seconds, so, which is a very good LPI. We're going to add in dynamic blinkout signs that activate, that prohibit the right turns while the LPI is going. After the LPI goes, we'll have a another sign pop in on that same blinkout sign saying yield to pedestrians. At the same time, we're going to be doing an upgrade to our video detection system. So this will be the first intersection that gets a new upgraded OptiView camera system. So it's a new product from our vendor. Supposed to have better object detection, better pedestrian detection. We're going to be doing it here, and should be getting near perfect pedestrian detection is what we've been sold on. Yeah. We're very excited to actually try it out. So the early results are very good on what we've seen. So LPI, how it works is the leading pedestrian interval activates the walk signal before the parallel vehicle green phase begins. So vehicles are stopped. Pedestrian gets to go into the crosswalk all on their own, like an exclusive pedestrian phase. They get a full 7 seconds all on their own. And then the vehicles are released after 7 seconds. So it's proven nationally to get better yielding behavior by vehicles. It can also reduce pedestrian crashes by about 20 to 30%, and even more it also increases driver yielding rates up to 84% at signalized intersections. So it also improves the visibility of pedestrians in the crosswalk by getting them out there early and out there in the driver's eye. It's a low cost change with a strong safety benefit. So this is how it works. So you will be detected at the corner passively. You don't have to press the button. You can press it if you want. It makes a little sound if you do. So you can do that, get detected at the corner passively. It'll detect you. You enter the intersection. When you get the walk symbol, there will be a blink out sign saying no right turn on red. You have the LPI going. Cars cannot go. Red. No right turn on red. 1 second. 3 seconds. 5 seconds. 7 seconds. Cars are released. I'm exaggerating the size of these signs just because it doesn't really show up good on the presentation. But this is what will happen. So that blink out will go from no right turn on red to turning vehicles yield to pedestrians. And this will be going for the vehicles to now yield to the pedestrians that may still be in the crosswalk. So this also covers any pedestrians that are coming northbound in the crosswalk. My graphic only shows a pedestrian going southbound, but pedestrians could also be going northbound in the same graph. So now you go 7 seconds, 9 seconds. Now you're on the other side of the road and hopefully getting all the way across, you know, conflict free. So this is a near-term solution. Actually, let me pause there. So this is what we're trying to do in the southbound direction at Top Christie. And let me go back to the very top. We are also going to be doing this in the eastbound direction of Top Christie. So in this location, we are going to be doing the same treatment, except that sign that you saw there is going to do a yield to bike and ped on the sign. So that's the only difference. So this area, we have pedestrians in this crosswalk. This other one, we're going to have, we do have a dedicated bike movement here. So we are going to have bike ped as the move there. So we'll have the similar treatment. It will also have 7 seconds. It will have the LPI plus treatment. It walks again. Okay. So this is a near-term solution while we continue working toward the Emerville Loop project. It's aligned with our LRSP and focuses on the highest risk movements at this intersection. And it's quick to implement and cost-effective. We're trying to do it by the next 2 months is kind of our timeline right now. And it gives us a way to improve the safety now rather than waiting a long time and doing more studies or anything like that. So we can just knock it out right now with our current budgets at play. And from here, we have already done the signal timing phase of study that. We can make this work. We've ordered much of the equipment already. We're scheduling it with our contractor. And that's about it. So that is the next steps. So any questions and comments?
It was great in your showing the southbound pedestrian, and which, of course, says the northbound pedestrian is going to be the one who no longer has the protection of no turn. And yet the only traffic will be coming from this direction. And so they are going to be exposed. Can you use that motion sensor to keep that no turn on until everyone is gone? Everyone's out of the crosswalk. Just a question.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't hold it any further than that. Yeah, we get a gridlock scenario.
There's a corner case here that I've encountered that if you're going westbound on the bike lane, it's a two-way bike crossing to go into that path. And I've noticed drivers making the right on red or right in general don't expect a bike as oncoming traffic. I'm worried that having the LPI might actually make that worse, that you're more likely to be exactly where the car is going to be turning when it turns green, and they're not going to be looking for a bike coming incoming traffic because it's the opposite direction that they normally expect a bike to be coming.
Hmm.
Has there been any research done into that?
Not necessarily. I guess I got to map out how you're thinking about this.
If you're
where the 25
here comes from, like the last across.
Yeah. You're going east.
Yeah. You're going west.
You're going that way.
As a bicyclist going this way.
Oh, okay.
Because it becomes it's the two-way cycle track to get underneath the bridge to go to the marina. I've almost been hit there on more than one occasion during the walk. The
northbound right turns.
The bicyclist going west, the cars are going turning right to go south.
Okay. So it's north, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like right where your mouse is where the interaction happens. And I've been almost hit there on a couple of occasions. I've gotten cursed out there as well for biking in a sidewalk. Or in a crosswalk the wrong way. I'm just worried that the leading pedestrian is going to lead to the bike being exactly where the right turn is when they release.
As the LPI is going, they are not allowed to turn. There's an illegal right turn now with this new condition. There's going to be a blank out sign saying no right
turn. But like when that ends, like the bike is now either just getting there or like just before there, and they're going to be released and they're going to be ready to go.
And that they'll be released with this new yield turning sign. So that it's an improved, a little bit more dynamic flashing, not flashing actually, it just pops up. So we'll have it on the near side and on the far side. So we're hoping to see better driver behavior with these signs from today.
I hope that helps. I'm just worried that they're not going to expect where the bike is coming from.
Yeah.
This will be about 7 seconds.
Because the people going to the east have the advantage of the rhythm, because that's where I've seen cyclists almost hit, is starting to take advantage of that walk, and they're turning and they keep turning, so the cyclists have to pull back. But now with the red, now they have the 7 second advantage.
It should help this way a lot.
Yeah,
you just check it out.
I made this observation. So it's a question. I made this observation about 59th and Hollis, which you all put an LPI there. It's been really very effective. I appreciate it. What is the city or anybody in California doing to educate people on bikes that they can go during an LPI? What can you do, right, to say that, like, hey, bikes you guys can go to when? Southbound leg or the southern leg of that, like, it's very relevant. And I think that the average cyclist, 7 seconds is actually plenty of time to pretty much make it most of the way across the. And that's the problem. That's most of the way, but not entirely.
It usually, I'll have to get back to you on the specific situation and intersection, but it depends on where the bike is positioned. If they're using the crosswalk or in the lane, they can use the LPI or not, or if there's a sign that indicates. But some jurisdictions, like Boston, Massachusetts, they put up a sign that actually, says bikes use the crosswalk signal, something like that. So that's a way to, say, hey, bikes, you're okay to use it. That's what we do at Showman and Christie as well. So, but we also have the bike hit saying green go, that's probably the way to do it, is a sign like that. But
are there any cameras for detection at this intersection now?
Yes, there is. It's just an older generation.
Is there passive pedestrian sections set up right now and it just doesn't work well?
It's there. It's not the best. It's an older generation, actually. But it is there and working, but it's a little further away.
Thanks for putting some effort into this. I know it's been top priorities for quite a while. What other features or concepts were thought about beyond the being pedestrian interval and light changes?
Longer LPIs. That's one of the biggest ones. Exclusive head phases. We did look into that with our traffic analysis. Both were not feasible. Flashing yellow arrows was another concept that we tried to look at and try to implement. A little bit too costly was one of the main factors on that one. And so, yeah, those, I think those are the three things that we looked at in this initial quick build phase of Pal Christi right now.
Any other clarifying questions? Public comment?
Hey, Robert, friends with Bikies Bay. I acknowledge that the project isn't perfect, but I think it will be a big improvement over current conditions, especially for pedestrian traffic. Just to clarify one thing, the state law does say that bike riders can cross with a block signal again, either in the crosswalk or in the lane, unless there's a separate, you know, bike signal provided, in which case they follow that. So putting up, I do think maybe putting up some bikes to standard MUT speed bikes use walk signal signs could help, you know, at this or other locations where there are LPIs to let bike riders know they can use that head start. Now, I'll note just for the group that there actually was a crash here recently with a bike rider making a same movement that Eric mentioned. Thankfully, not severely injured. And the driver stopped and they made a police report. Everyville police initially found the bike rider at fault. And thankfully, we're able to follow up on that and thank staff and council for getting involved with that to get that reversed. But there's a lot of education for everyone involved, not just bike riders, but everyone, you know, these conditions. Looking bigger picture, I'm working on some advocacy around a state bill to try to give bike riders the same right-of-way as pedestrians at bike crossings and other locations like this. So I might, if, you know, once we get a sponsor for that, it'll probably be a while because not current legislative session. I'd be happy to bring it back to the BPAC in case there's an interest in trying to endorse a bill like that. The one other thing I was going to mention too is that a lot, and this won't address it, and I don't think you can address it until you get to the loop project. One of the biggest issues is actually late arrivals for the trail at this intersection, because it's not always the first car they have to worry about, because the car, that first car actually, you know, the driver's looking for, can see, is the second or third car on the line, who's just following the first one, whose visibility is being blocked by that first car. So, you know, I think those are the types of things that you can only really address with full separation of the crossing movements. So I'm really supportive of the city moving on that as soon as possible.
Thanks for the long on that. I wasn't fully aware of it. I knew there's something.
It was 24, yeah, so yeah.
That's, yeah. Okay, cool.
Pretty good. Any other public comment? Member comments? I had one thought about possibly slowing cars down, or just at least reminding them that they're, like, for this right turn from Powell to go towards Trader Joe's, right? Member Suter was talking about how they're already possibly in the crosswalk, already kind of thinking about making that right. If we could put a very small rubber or plastic bump, not something that the fire department would care about, but anything to, like, let people know that they have entered the intersection, like just before the crosswalk, both of these crosswalks, all the crosswalks in the photo. I think it'd be helpful to remind people that yes, they're now in an intersection, and for the second and third car, they would have to slow down to, or maybe they wouldn't, but they'd hit that and probably would slow down and then might have more time to look at the other aspects of the intersection, cyclists coming at them, pedestrians coming at them, the small kid that's behind mom that has already made it across. Just thinking about other kinds of infrastructure, quick build things we can add to this that aren't permanent, that can be installed pretty quickly and pretty cheaply.
Thanks, so check things out. I'm not sure if there's a product out there.
Well, like, yeah, sometimes they don't, like, for intersection dividers where they, you know, short of having a plastic post, they make these little things. They're not that tall, and you kind of slap them on there with some cement or whatever. But even driving over that, you would know that something, you're not just driving on the road, you hit something.
Yeah.
Well, like one of those on the sides of highways to wake you up. Yeah. So that would wake you up. Yeah. But you have to go fast for that to work.
Yeah.
You might be able to put those, like, around the, like,
Harbor turn to provide like a tighter turn radius, and then there would be like a protected area for bikes and peds out in the intersection. So that might be something, because I know it's a pretty large radius there.
Okay. Yeah.
He considered going with the at scale signs since they seem to work here.
We can order.
All I want to say is that this has been one of the most pressing issues in this committee for a long time, and at some point we just kind of had to wait for this. So it's really good to see it coming forward. I hope we can get some action here as quickly as possible.
A quick question: are you planning on coming back to this committee at all for this, or because you said the timeline is like 2 months or this couple months, so
we'll probably just give another update, probably during like public works updates or something. Right. So yeah, we're trying to, as soon as product comes in, yeah. It goes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Unrelated comment: we have about 15 minutes till 7:30, and we have an hour and 15 minutes of content on the schedule.
Is Navar planning on doing an ATP update?
Yeah, I think she's good. Or they're good.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. You want to take the time to extend the meeting? I motion to extend the meeting until 8 p.m.
I second.
Okay, Member Wax.
Sorry,
what are we voting?
We're voting on extending the meeting until 8.
Oh, yeah. Sure, yes.
Member Raymond?
Aye.
Member Markley?
Aye.
Member Zinski is absent. Some of his banks. Member Cohen, Vice Chair Cohen.
Aye.
And Chair Olson.
Aye. And yeah, just to keep in mind, we have roughly 45 minutes to do ATP plan, Greenway visitor update, planning updates, public work updates, future agenda items, announcements, member comments, and then adjournment.
And Bay Street parking.
And the Bay Street parking.
I know, I shouldn't have said that out loud. There we go. All right. Welcome all to the second annual ATP annual report. So we're just going to walk through. Yes, it did. Okay, great. So we're going to go over the background and vision very briefly. Just as a reminder, there's 6 goals. They're all qualitative, and we're going to start with what we said last year. And then end with, if I don't know if we'll have time for discussion tonight, if you want to, we can always bump that to the next meeting if need be, okay? But basically, because it's qualitative, how we measure that is having discussion with BPAC and then sharing that with Planning Commission, Transportation, Sustainability Committee, City Council. Do a quick overview of 11 policy recommendations, 14 program recommendations, how those are going, that are in 5 different program areas, and then looking at our maps for this year and see how we're doing with that. So just as a reminder, it's a blueprint for improving our active transportation infrastructure, and it's focused on projects that have the most impact of improving safety, comfort, and mobility for all. And then it was developed over nearly 3 years. Your participation was all critical. Over 1,300 people participated, which is outstanding for a city of our size, like really, really outstanding. There were 13 engagement activities, which included workshops and focus groups, and 16 public meetings, most of which were at BPAC, but also included the Transportation Committee, Planning Commission, City Council. So as a reminder, what the vision is, the city of Emeryville is a community where active, sustainable transportation is the easy choice. It is safe, comfortable, equitable, and accessible to all. So that's what we're aiming for. That's the vision we have. Okay, so we have 11 policy recommendations. There's not 11 numbers. They have subcategories. But basically, we have a commitment to actually implement the plan, and have a plan that we just sit on the shelf and forget about for 10 years and say, oh, we better do it again.
Now we have to check in about it and make sure we're doing it. So we have to seek resources to implement the plan. That's ongoing. That's how our CIP is structured to support that. In 2025, these funds were used to fund the Powell Street study, which will go to council for approval in 2026, and also to evaluate opportunities for plan integration as other roadway improvements are constructed. That is an ongoing standard practice also. So you'll see these broken up into complete progress, ongoing, or WEF, and we're doing it. So for maintenance, resurfacing bike facilities at the same time as street, yep, that's, we're doing that. That's our standard practice. And then for making sure we have sufficient funding, we have our CIP, we have the Public Works Maintenance Fund, and we also seek grants, as you know. That's how we get things fully funded around here. So this year, our 2025 examples for what we did for maintenance include replacing plastic delineators, striping, signage, pedestrian lighting, and paving. All right, so Safe Routes to Schools, we have progress. We still don't have an official program going on, but we are applying Safe Routes lens to things we do. So in 2025, the city did the analysis for the next round of speed reductions, which includes streets adjacent to schools. So trying to make sure that as we're going through things, even though we don't have a Safe Routes coordinator, that we're doing things that will help improve our areas around schools and our connectivity to them. And then the banning right turn on red, that's ongoing. It's evaluated as each part of paving a street improvement project. So we haven't done an outright thing forever, can't ever do it. We look at each situation as we do each paving project. So for plan evaluation, we haven't updated ATP yet. So we haven't had to do a plan evaluation for the ATP fully. And then when feasible, conduct bicycle and pedestrian counts before and after new projects are constructed. There were not any applicable projects in 2025 for that, and in 2025 for that. Next year, we'll have Sutter that obviously will be having all sorts of counts. Establish and centralized database. That is our ATP annual report. That's how we're gathering, collecting the data and tracking it. So far, that's what we're doing. And then leading pedestrian intervals. Oh, Ryan did the master's class on that tonight. Thank you, Ryan. So that's ongoing. And then lowering of speed limits, also ongoing, right? So I think you guys have been talking a lot about both of those things. So our 13 programmatic recommendations are divided into five different groups of equity, encouragement, education, and safe routes to school, evaluation, and wayfinding. So for equity, we have targeted outreach programs. That's going ongoing. That's like including diversity of languages in our outreach materials, bicycle accessory giveaway programs. How it's written in the ATP is kind of talking about more things that PD has done, would do, because PD has done things in the past. We do not have an official program set up, but we have given away bike lights as part of Bike to Wherever Day. So we do have progress on that. We're trying to incorporate it where we already are devoting staff time and resources. So there's room for improvement. We're also doing what we can with where we're at. And then biped infrastructure equity program, that's really, really looking at where we're focusing our resources. And we're focusing our resources on southern part of Adeline this year. And that's definitely an identified area that really needs some help. So looking at parts of the city that need the help most and trying to really focus on those. So equity highlight. So also the tree plantings at the marina, one of the, you know, goals we have is enjoyable and wanting to be where you're at, and at the tree planting, focusing there, we thought was part of that. So for encouragement, expanding bike share, woo, big progress on that this year. 3 new stations, right? Car-free street events, progress. We haven't added events, but I think we have so much devotion to our events that I personally think we can include that as progress, right? We have our holiday parade, we have our harvest festival, we have the spooky streets. Those are ongoing events that are just getting stronger and more embedded into this community each year. Bicycle friendly community, I believe you talked about that earlier tonight, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Do I need to touch base on that at all?
Maybe just how the ATP intersects with that.
So for the ATP, we're not ready to apply for it yet. What the ATP says is that we need to have substantial implementation of our plan yet. We're only in year 2. We haven't had opportunity to do substantial implementation yet. So not having been here for your conversation earlier, What that would say to me is kind of assessing later this year or earlier next year where we're at with our implementation and what metrics we feel like we should have set before we apply. But it's, the ATP is very clear that it's not something we do at the beginning of the plan, that we need to show how awesome we are in actually implementing and following through with the plan, not just having one. Any questions about that since I missed the conversation earlier?
Just the context of the conversation is that we're going to postpone until applying for next year, so that might actually work very well.
That sounds very consistent with our ATP. Well done, everyone. So employer-based encouragement programs and bicycle-friendly business programs. So that's something we're working on going. We don't have a specific employer outreach program going on, but one of the big things about Bike to Wherever Day is really getting different companies to engage with the city, engage with the community. And so we have that marked as ongoing because we do use that as an opportunity for that. And then bike parking retrofit program, progress on that. As you may recall, we had a little discussion earlier this year about our bike parking regulations. And then we did an assessment of what buildings have bike parking per our regulations. And so that was kind of like our starting point. Now we have like a starting point of what buildings actually have bike parking and might need them the most. Exciting news is that we will be getting planning interns later this year, and we're hoping to have them assess bicycle parking further and go actually look at and do a study on our bike parking. So it's going to be a little bit slow going. We have to wait for their availability, but very exciting that we're actually going to make some progress on that and be able to move forward with that. So encouragements, expanded bike share, we talked about. This is a little bit overlap, but we have, it says Bay Street. That's weird. Anyway, I don't know what happened to that slide. As you may know, I was having some technical difficulties with this, but we have our, three new bike shares, and I'm particularly partial to the one at the park. Very exciting. Our holiday parade, as we talked about, our spooky streets and the Harvest Festival. You can see that our programmatic recommendations overlap with our policy recommendations right here. And then just more highlights there from the Bike to Wherever Day. All right. And then the progress for that. Okay, so education safe routes. I just took a shot of Steve Van Drive. That's probably not the most high frequency spot for people here, but I just wanted to let you know that this is an example of the city prioritizing the safe routes, as I talked about earlier. And we haven't done adult bicycling skill classes yet, but we do need to cross-pollinate a little bit more with our local organizations, such as Bike East Bay, to make sure that people are aware of opportunities and maybe host some more events in the city this coming year. That was kind of very similar. We also don't have a driver education campaign yet, but that is something we could probably work through social media for the following year. And for traffic counts, that's ongoing. In terms of there's opportunities for development, which we didn't have this year. And then we have our counters at the Greenway and the bridge. Okay, and then wayfinding. We made progress on that this year. We have a art installation chosen for 40th Street, and that includes signage, stylized signage to go in. And that was a huge community outreach process that I think probably most of you are aware of. So looking at our progress maps. So, well, that didn't show up well at all. What it's supposed to, show is that this whole area is in yellow for our Pell Street. I don't know what happened, folks. I'm sorry. Work in progress is all the 40th and Showmount. So we have studies on that going, and then Hollis Street at being not finished in 2025, but as you saw, we're going on last year. So a good portion of the city having active work done on it. Parts that are complete are Shell Mound up there, which we'll show on our next slide, but that wasn't a study area. That was, I'm just jumping ahead of myself because those colors aren't on the way they're supposed to be. I apologize for that. So there we go. The descriptions of it are the loop initial analysis complete. I've got a lot of information about that tonight. 48th Street and Chalmion, actually having the CEQA nearly completed in 2025 and fully funded. Powell Street study substantially completed in Hollis, south of Powell, under construction. So I am very frustrated about the situation. I apologize. So everything I just talked about is on this map as well. This is for proposed pedestrian improvements. And it also highlighted things that already happened, like 47th and Adeline intersection, Hollis Street, and the ped bike improvements up on Shannon over here. And then also the improvements over here near 65th. So the written highlights are, again, Powell Street and the Hollis Street south of Powell. There's a lot of overlap, right? Because the way the ATP is written is it focuses on pedestrian, bike, and intersection and study areas. So they're all going to overlap. It's just different ways of looking at the same thing and highlighting different things. I think what was most impressive to me for the spot improvements is all of the studies we've done over the past 2 years and all of the implementing. This entire part is covered. The peninsula is covered. All of this interior part, because the loop is covered, all the way up 40th Street is covered, right? And then we have spot improvements up along the Greenway, on Adeline up here, all along Horton and Hollis. It's a huge percentage of the city that you can imagine. Okay, my colors aren't showing. But hopefully you also witness on a regular basis. Boom. So here's to me personally, going through the city, one of the most exciting intersections. And just going there today and seeing the green paint starting to go on is very exciting also. So that just I watched it, took pictures. So that's a big change right there in the past year, right? For the bikeways, I don't think there's any new information that we haven't already talked about here. But I think what really shows up on this map when there's colors on it is the shell mound, protected bike lanes on it. So the 40th Street and Shell Mound final design is highlighted here. Again, the finished study of Doyle Street, 62nd to 59th. So it looks really small on the map, but it's a really important connector, right? And then Adeline 40th, 1st Street, all the way south, planned and designed. So that's a really big deal. And the Powell Street, substantial planning work completed, 10% design. And then here's another photo. It's a little bit harder to see because of the shadows in this image. But here we are on Shell Mound, and it's showing a year ago there was some green paint on it, but now we have fully protected on both sides. And I bike that with my kids who are 4 and 5, and I would not have done that a year ago. So also a big change from last year is that we adopted the local roadway safety plan. We didn't have that when we did our first review of ATP. So just noting things, it doesn't say in our ATP to do that, but they go hand in hand. That's more of the safety side of things. This is more the policy and programming side of things for ATP. So it's just very exciting that we have both of these tools now to work together moving forward. I know you've already talked about that a lot tonight, but I did put some highlights on here because it's important and pretty great. So for data, we talked about having data to show to go with this. I just did some very brief data for you. It's very cursory, but the Greenway counters show a 5% increase this year over last year, and the bridge counters 16% increase. The bridge counter, does anyone want to guess the busiest day for the bridge count?
Christmas.
Tokyo Central.
Oh, for the holiday parade. For the last day for 2026, maybe Tokyo Central. Yeah, but the holiday parade. It's the busiest day, like three times as busy. It's like so busy on that day. So that's really great to see even the Greenway continuing to increase on a steady basis. The bike share data is pretty profound. Growth. Emeryville had a lot of growth over 2 years, 107%. Part of that is that we're expanding our stations, but part of that is it's really consistent with the system-wide growth as well. And the inclusion of e-bikes has really added to that growth as well. I'm excited to see what the numbers look like next year, because Berkeley is adding a whole bunch of stations right now in really good locations that I think might just really help the connectivity between the cities. So let's see what happens next year. Our most popular stations, anybody want to take a guess?
Bay Street.
Those are the top two. Yep, those are the top two. But what's interesting is it's not the same every month, so it kind of fluctuates. There is definitely a general trend line up overall, but it's not consistent as much. As it's very weather dependent, so you could have really high ridership and then tanks the next month because it rained or it was like really hot or something. But the overall trajectory is really good. And looking at our goals and progress for this year, that's what our discussion topic is for tonight. I don't know how you want to do it because I know we're a little bit shorter on time. But whatever you say, I shall put into my future presentations along with color maps for the rest of this cycle of reporting. I don't know if you have any questions or comments in general.
How do we want to do this? Because I mean, this seems like something that we want to spend time on, and time is not something we have a lot of right now.
I foresee this being a long discussion.
Yeah. As it should be. As it should be.
You're okay with coming back. Of course.
Yeah, are folks kind of leaning towards that? Allowing for the amount of time that this topic needs.
Does that impact your timelines?
Actually, it shouldn't, because I think going to be a 1 month delay for reporting to planning commission and city council. So what I could also do, I can talk with staff about how we want to handle that with transportation.
Yeah, yeah. Do you mind prefacing it, prefacing the conversation now and then? Like, what do you just need goals for each one of these?
So these are our six goals. Sorry. So the six goals of the plan are comfortable, connected, joyful, equitable, sustainable, and implementable. Those are not very qualitative goals. I can't be like, we did six intersections this year and now we're equitable, right? Like, that's not how it works. I'm not quite sure what the metrics for joyful would be. So these are very discussion oriented.
So you want examples.
Yeah. So what I did last year is I took your exact quotes or if it was more conversational, I took the gist of what you noted. And then I shared that with the Transportation Sustainability Committee, Planning Commission, City Council. So you are our metric.
Or joyful. Can you do an inverse of, when you go see the doctor and they have the pain chart?
Right. I mean, we could do numbers or something like that. Absolutely. Last year, the quote for joyful was joyful is up. That was the VPAC quote for last year. It was joyful is up.
The vibe economy is very hot right now.
The which economy?
The vibe economy.
The vibe economy. Totally. So I think what I would do next time when I come back is come back with the maps that you can actually see properly. I will say what you said last year, and then you can talk about what you'd like to for this year. Does that sound like a good setup for next round?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
As long as the other thing is we have time in the calendar to accommodate this. I assume we do, but.
For June, yeah. We're good.
Cool. All right.
Well, thanks for your presentation. Do we want to have a quick public comment on this approach? No, save it for next time. Okay.
Well, I guess I do have a question. Is this was very similar to what I did last year in setup. So whether you want to discuss feedback or if you have feedback about how it's presented, I'm totally open to that. You could email me directly also. When we made the ATP, what the direction was from everybody was come back with a report on it. There was no information on what or how or when or anything like that. The goal is to have this presented to you in March of every year. And we just had some technical difficulties getting it to you this year earlier. But the idea is every March you'll be able to review this.
Maybe we can also have a little bit of a homework assignment to think about this. Maybe we can get a reminder when the agenda goes out. That would be helpful.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we want to proceed in the order as it is on the agenda for the remaining items? Does anyone have to leave quickly? Any strong opinions? Okay, we'll go with the order it is, starting with the update of the bike parking at Bay Street.
Okay, so as you may have noticed, there's a new grocery store at Bay Street. When that went in, you have to have development approvals for anything. And as part of that, we put in the conditions of approval that in order to have the store finalized, they had to have staff sign off on making sure that the entire Bay Street development was compliant with the bike share terms that were in the original PUD, the original planning and development for Bay Street, what's saying the bicycle parking should be for all of Bay Street. And the reason we did that is there's been ongoing issues at Bay Street with having correct bicycle parking for years, having the right design, enough locations, enough bike racks, all everything installed properly, everything. And VPAC, for many years, was kind of hounding management there, being like, hey, can you please do something? We'd like to meet with you. We went on a walk there once. And nothing really changed. And they had new management and seemed more open to it, but nothing had really happened yet. So we put this requirement in. And the reason I'm presenting this to you tonight is just so that you understand how things kind of like get moved ahead sometimes. When you have opportunities, you can, you know, shuffle things ahead. So it was pretty simple. They needed to have a minimum of 50 retail customer bicycle parking racks visible and secure along Bay Street itself, and they needed to have long-term employee bike parking. They didn't have any long-term employee bike parking, and the bike racks on Bay Street itself were insufficient. So we worked with, I don't know why I said moving forward. Okay, we worked with management there, and I want to give kudos. They literally went through, did a photo inventory of every single bike rack. And then I did a walk with them and we measured them and talked about what would work, what didn't work, what could stay but would not count, what should just outbake, needed to be removed because it was problematic or something was wrong with it. And then where the opportunities for new spaces were. So this is just a sample of their work submitting to the city of their inventory of the bike parking. So I don't have pictures of the new installed bike parking, but basically, long story short, is they have a little bit more than is required now along the length of Bay Street. And they also have a new employee bike parking area. And if you've ever parked in their bike parking near where they have the food courts, you enter from the bridge, it's on the same level, it's just off to the side and it's secured. I just want to show you what that looks like and how that process works. And if you have any questions about that, I'm here for that. But I just want to let you know this is how staff works to get things done when other avenues have not worked and we seize opportunities. And I also want to really say that they were initially in the project, they did put it off to the end of the project. They didn't like do it first, right? Because they were more worried about getting the grocery store off the ground. But they were really great to work with and really were eager to do the right thing and wanted to do what was right. So I think that's important to know. That's it.
One quick question. Thanks for the presentation. Are the employee spots secured or restricted access?
Yeah. So they have a chain link around and it has the slats in between the chain link. They either have a fob or a code that they need, and they put in security cameras in order to let all the employees know. There's a couple different messaging systems they have for both the management and employees of Bay Street, and they use those. I have not checked on utilization yet. I actually think it won't be very high because I suspect that
people use bike share there a lot. But we'll see.
Follow-up question. Are the retail locations kind of informing their employees actively that they...
Oh, that was the part. Yeah, so they, the Bay Street management has a way to notify management of each store, and then I believe it's up to them to notify employees directly. But they were putting, they distributed flyers for all the break rooms, and I sent out, they have like a weekly or monthly message. They did that. And when there's new hires are going to get it part of their new hire packet. So we talked about different ways to notify, and I'm going to give it a couple of months, maybe the summer, check in with them and see how that's going to make sure that somebody's still implementing that. Yeah. If you have ideas on that, that's great. But that's, those sounds are the like tools doing, I have.
Sounds like you're doing all of the above in your power, yeah. So. Questions? What comment?
I'll come in again. Robert with Fike Spang. Thanks to the, looks like the employee, the design of the employee racks looks really good. They'll accommodate like lots of different types of bikes. So kudos on making sure the design was really appropriate. One of those walks that you talked about a long time ago was with the city had funding for bike link lockers, and they were trying to get Bay Street to install them. And then we did a bunch of walks together, and then Bay Street ended up passing, even though the city was paying for it. That was different management. I've had a couple of conversations with them since then. They said they actually are more interested now, including at that, parking garage, second or third level space, which doesn't get a ton of use for the existing racks, but could be a good location in the future for bike link lockers. So I sort of put out that they're interested if there is an opportunity to coordinate on any funding opportunities in the future.
Absolutely. And if any opportunities come available, I definitely want to know about that. I did actually tell them that I was willing to have bike link count towards their employee as long as they paid for it, right? And then it'd be a public service that employees could use it, win-win for everybody. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that BikeLink was not responsive in the timeline that they needed. So unfortunately, that opportunity did not work out. I wasn't part of those conversations directly, so I don't know, but my understanding is it just wasn't, something was not working on communication, okay. So the timelines. But I tried for that. Yeah. I tried to incorporate that as part of this as a win-win for everyone.
Any member comments?
Thank you for doing this. I've been over to Bay Street more lately and definitely have noticed the increased amount of parking. It's been nice not having to lock my bike to a trash can.
It hurts, right? I'll also note that the bike parking that's around Tokyo Central is specifically for that and did not count as part of what we attributed to the PUD. So that was a separate permit that was not part of PUD, right? When the Bay Street was developed, they were not anticipating grocery store parking. So those were counted separately. They were not numbers that were included together. They didn't get to do double dips on that.
Thanks.
Okay. No more comments? Thank you. Now we can move to our 2 million Greenway visitor update.
That one.
That's me.
Yep. Just stay right here.
That happened.
It was a fun little event.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, I'm Phil Toss. I'm in Public Works, Associate Engineer. And we had a 2 million Greenway user event in March. That's me with a goofy smile. Those are our winners, or our winner. Second picture, that's our counter. It's a fun planet. That's our Greenway there. Fun. But yeah, we had the event on March 23rd of this year. And yeah, it commemorated 2 million counted users by the Greenway Count. A bunch of homemade signs.
Yeah, all over the place.
It's kind of fun. It's meant to be a lighthearted, fun event. Premium Connor was installed April 1st, without a joke, April 1st, 2023. So since then, we've had 2 million counted users. We had a table set up with snacks, had some drinks, and a lot of people walked by. They were not the 2 millionth person, of course, but they asked questions, what are we doing here? And so we're, you know, the counter's been counting since April 1st, 2023, and we talked to them and had a little poster with our projects and stuff. And there's Jesse, who was there representing VPAC. Me holding the sash again. Just lighting in the shadows.
Uneasily.
Yeah, that's right. That's our winner. Caitlin was our 2 millionth user. You can kind of see in the rightmost picture in the upper right corner, flower petal that were natural confetti we were trying to use. We didn't really get to disperse in the photos, but yeah, I tried to get it to work. It didn't quite work for the photos, but yeah. So yeah, it was fun. And they were, and Caitlin and her friend, I can't remember her friend's name, but Caitlin and Brent were super down for this, and they were very excited once they realized we weren't human traffickers. They did pass by, and then we heard them at the end, like near 66, like, are they like for real? Is this a real thing? Or they tried to kidnap us? And then we realized we didn't have any like city branded merch or anything. I just had my badge on. So next time, like, canopy with Public Works and like logoed stuff. So that's like, you know, we learn these things. So some stats, as realized it's kind of small, but so right now we have 2,080,000 counted on the Greenway. For this year, we have 219,000 total traffic, which is actually about 1,000 fewer than last year at this point. So, EPAC, get your friends out there, get those numbers up. And just for the two lines on the bottom are for the bridge. That's why I have the video of the bridge. So total traffic on the bridge since that counter was installed on January 1st, 2024, we have a total count of 563,000, and for this year we have just under 61,000 counted. And Eric, you were right. The highest number was the Tokyo Central opening day. That's the highest count for the bridge. So, yeah. And then I just kind of did a download of the numbers from the Greenway counter and punched it into, plugged it into AI, and it's projecting a 3 million user in September of next year, 2027. So plenty of time for VPAC and friends to plan an event for them. So, yeah. Any questions or feedback? Do you have any?
How close is AI to getting the date for the 2 millionth user?
It was off by a couple of days. Oh. Yeah, so it was pretty close. And like even like the projection that Ryan was coming up with like a couple months out, it was only off by a few days. Yeah. So. And the weather, it was the really good weather that happened in February, March that kind of the thing. Yeah, weather. But yeah, like that last week we were kind of, I was watching the hours. No, fewer people. Where's the rain? But yeah.
Any other questions? Public comment?
Robert with Bikey Spinning. I would say it because it's on the audience. I noticed the eco counter, the company that makes the counters, has a website with live data. The bridge counter is on that, but the Greenway one isn't. Is there it would be either possible to get that on the EcoCounter website, like the bridge one, or is there some other publicly accessible visualization for the agreement counter?
I'm pretty sure we got it included with the initial purchase in the bridge counter, mm-hmm. and that's going to expire at a certain point. So I think that's the only reason it's on there.
Oh,
so it's part of the subscription level. And we don't have a lot.
Yeah. Well, in the future, yeah, if there's a way to make it public, yeah. I think that'd be cool too. Yeah.
One thing to note on that topic, we have been sharing the data with UC Berkeley, with some self-proclaimed data nerds over there. So they're using the in their transportation center doing some stuff with some of our data, and they have a login from us to get in there. So, but yeah, it'd be nice also for the public. Yes.
Do you all share this out with the public? Did I miss it?
Oh, there will be a social media post in the coming weeks. Yeah. And I wanted to time it with Bike Month. Yeah, since it is Bike
Month. I would love to know when that goes out.
Yeah.
So that I can marvel in its glory.
Yeah. We'll have that picture of you lurking in the heavens.
Camouflaged. Any other comments?
Thanks, guys, for doing this.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. And that gives us 10 minutes left for putting updates and public works updates.
Okay, great. I'm also not going to move on. Corner, Alyssa, assistant planner. It's completely echoey over here.
Yeah, you can also lurk in.
I'm going to move a little bit.
Let's move the spot right here if you want.
I was mostly just hearing my voice in my ear. I don't have much to give you an update on. We are still internally reviewing Sutter, but it is going to be daylighted quite soon. So if you go on the city website and you look up Sutter Hospital, it'll take you directly basically to a web page that has information about the project as it is, and a long list of meetings that will be held. You can go to any number of the meetings. It will be at BPAC. It's scheduled for the moment for June 1st. But the first meeting is actually going to be run by Sutter Health. It is going to be a community meeting. It is at 5300 Chiron on the second floor. And that will be May 18th at 6 p.m. So that's in 2 weeks' time on a Monday. Just on a personal note, that building is really interesting. It is by an architect whose name escapes me. So it's also a good opportunity to just get inside there and see what it looks like. So if not for the meeting, go for that. It will also be going to the Commission on Aging and Parks and Rec Committee in June as well, both of which are held at ECCL. And then after all of the committee meetings, it will be going to Planning Commission and City Council for a study session before they start to scope out the environmental impact report. So there will be plenty of opportunities to hear about the project. Again, you can go to multiple meetings. So if another thought comes to you or you have a question that you want to ask directly, there are opportunities to do so. And again, that is on the city website. If you live, I think it's like 3,000 feet within 3,000 feet of the project, you may be getting a mailer about that community meeting. So please come check it out. That's all I got.
There have been questions, public comment, member comments.
I just want to note that the little bit of information that they did send out said that it was 785,000 square foot hospital is what they're planning to build. Salesforce Tower is 1.4 million square feet, to put that in context, and that's in addition to what's already built on that site and a possible future 55,000 square foot thing on the north end. It is huge.
Would it be maybe tall, or
it would have to be, I guess, for the parcel.
Yeah,
it'll be a very tall building at that square footage. But again, this is early days. They have not done, CEQA has not started yet. They have not actively publicized this project in any way, the members of the public. So we're pretty early in the process.
Is the thought they kind of shoot high and let them take it down a little bit?
I mean, you know, we're competing against both. They have specific needs they need to meet, but obviously there are going to be massive impacts on Emeryville and, frankly, the surrounding areas. So, yeah, it's up to us to understand what those impacts are and pinpoint those issues.
Anybody know how big Alt Debates is in square footage?
I don't know off the top of my head.
The Ashby one?
And that's what it's replacing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if there's no further comments or questions, thank you. We get our final intermission item, Public Works update.
Yeah, we'll keep it short and sweet. So update on the Hollis Street and the sustainable streetscapes, some trees and all the trees and landscaping have been installed. So you can see that in the various green infrastructure on the street. And green striping is going in this week. So like Navarre noted, along Hollis and Powell and other locations, that green stripe is going in. And then the solar lights and bus stop signs should come in later this month. And then the speed limits report was approved. Her recommendations were approved at council. So implementation will be happening over the next couple of months. And the greenway signage that was heard here at BPAC will be going to the Transportation Sustainability Commission next week. And then 40th Street, so they're working through Caltrans processes and hope to have bids out hopefully this summer or fall for construction. And then the Powell Street redesign, 10% design will be going to council on the 19th of May for approval. So that'll be including the cycle track. They presented here a couple months ago. So that'll be 10% design. So exciting. And then we had 9 applications for VPAC.
Yes.
So planning, we have more than just the bare minimum.
Yeah.
So they will be going for approval at Transportation Sustainability Committee next week on the 12th. Are all my updates.
Thank you.
The reason I'm so excited about that is because I went before City Council and talked about how we need to do more outreach, and it happened.
Oh, very thankful.
Yeah, big shout out to Robert with Bike East Bay. He helped out. I think you helped out as well, Eric. Yeah, thanks a lot for getting the word out.
Any clarifying questions?
How many spots was the 9 applications for?
There were 5 terms up.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So we actually have 4 over.
We have 60 seconds left. Do we need to extend the meeting another 5 minutes?
Public comments?
Nope.
Remember comments?
Nope.
Future agenda items?
Nope.
Announcements, member comments?
Nope.
All right, we're going to have 30 seconds early.
That's what every meeting is be run.
Somebody just saying no.
It's 261,300
square feet.
We're not
gonna be in a
bigger
job, but somebody had to do it.
We're
full. On the your project, bike friendly cities.
The walk application.
Okay, I'd be happy to welcome being.
Questions. I like nice to look at.